the process is always more valuable than the outcome. And as long as you're ticking the basics week to week, engaging with that process, you will get the outcomes, but they're not always guaranteed. I think that's the thing with running. Those outcomes aren't guaranteed. I mean, it's probably a big part of what keeps people coming back. Just the thought that, hey, I might have that day today. Like today is the day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to feel great. I'm going to get everything that I've been working for. And I think that's what drives a lot of people. And you need to be able to find some joy in the process because the outcome isn't guaranteed at all. And as long as you can find some sort of purpose and value in that process and you actually enjoy what you're doing, then you're going to get a hell of a lot out of running. You know, running, training shouldn't be a punishment. It shouldn't be something that you feel like you have to do. It should be something that you feel like you want to do. It's exciting that there's a lot of people involved in running, but we just want to, like, for myself and Michaela, we just want to make sure that we're fostering like a healthy relationship with running.
All right, here we are. Welcome back to the Stronger Stride podcast. You are here today with a very special guest, an Athletics Australia Level 2 recreational running coach, an ultra and trail runner himself, a very impressive athlete and a very impressive coach. We have Tim Locke joining us. How are you, Tim?
Well, what an introduction. That was nice.
You should get that everywhere you go. Every time you walk into a cafe, everywhere, you should be getting that intro.
Just put that on a business card.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks so much for coming on. Very excited to talk to you, get a little bit more understanding about, I guess, your coaching philosophies, coaching principles, where you started with coaching and running. And then we'll dive a little bit deeper into some 50K tips and tricks and also talking a little bit more about my prep and Tarawera 50 that happened a few days ago.
Sounds good.
Awesome. So for the listeners who aren't familiar, let us know a little bit about yourself, how you got into running, where that all started, and I guess what you're doing with it now.
So how I got into running was I was working out of a gym for probably, I guess, cumulatively, maybe close to 8 years. And at the time, wasn't doing a hell of a lot of running. I was kind of dabbling in a little bit of triathlon. And one of the guys that worked at the gym, I was speaking to and just asking what he was getting up to on a Friday after work. And he said, I'm going running. And I said, oh, cool. And he said, you can come if you want. And so I thought, I'll definitely go with you. And then, so we went trail running, probably the first time I'd actually done trail running specifically. And I just loved it. And then from that, I kind of dove right in and just decided to explore it more. And this was back in 2013, maybe 2012. And so from that, kind of things just snowballed. And actually, the first race I signed up for was Tarawera back in the day, which is quite topical. But yeah. I've been doing kind of, I guess, recreationally running for that period, and then also coaching, working out of a gym, doing some running coaching kind of concurrently. And then probably since 2018, I want to say, have dived fully into running coaching as kind of a primary job. So that's kind of where we are now. And at the moment, I still like to run and train and probably race, try and pick one big race a year to focus on. But I just really enjoy the process of training, the process of running and just getting out and about. And so for me, it's definitely less about racing and being competitive and more about just enjoying the process and enjoying what I'm doing.
Yeah, awesome. I think that's a great way to keep it sustainable and enjoyable too, because I think often you'll see people who they'll pick a race, they'll be focusing on that for X amount of time. They get to it, they achieve their goal or they don't. And then they're kind of like, oh, what do I do now? They're not sure. They've got no kind of focus or desire to keep going because their whole focus initially was that goal rather than actually enjoying what they're doing in the lead up. And if you look at it like a time percentage, you might spend a couple of hours doing your race, but imagine how many hours you're spending training for that. It's quite a difference. So yeah, finding a love for it, I think is really important.
Yeah, I think that's bang on. I think you need to be able to find some joy in the process because the outcome isn't guaranteed at all. And as long as you can find some sort of purpose and value in that process and you actually enjoy what you're doing, then you're going to get a hell of a lot out of running.
For sure. Which distance did you do at Tarawera that year?
So back then it was the distances were a little bit funny. They did a 100-kilometer race and a 50-mile race, so roughly 80K. And then they did I think from memory, it was like a 60-kilometer was the shortest race they did. And so I'd signed up for the 60-kilometer race, but a cyclone came over the North Island probably a day out from the race. And so the morning of the race, I had to reroute a lot of the races. And so the 60-kilometer got I think it got scrapped to a 50K maybe, and then the 100K got shortened to 75K. And they kind of said to everyone on the start line, you can just do whatever you want. And so I thought, oh, I've come all this way. Like, why not try and push myself a little bit further? And so I ended up doing the 75K that day, which was it was like an amazing day, and it like really eye opening into just kind of what the sport was about back then and still to this day is. But it was a kind of a steep learning curve jumping into that distance, but I really took away like a lot from it. And it's kind of helped frame how I like to view things with coaching now as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. You mentioned it being a steep learning curve. I think signing up for an ultra as your first event is quite a bold move, right? Like, what was that decision-making process? Did you, when you did that first run, did you think, oh, I like the idea of going longer, I prefer that, rather than kind of, you know, a lot of people would start with a 5K, then a 10, then a half and work their way up. What was that thought process like?
So at the time I was doing triathlon as well. And so I guess a lot of the training and training days I were doing were reasonably long, and I like to go out for kind of, just longer days out, either like, you know, running, riding, swimming, a bit of everything. And I think that kind of stems from growing up in the country. We used to just get out, you know, on the weekends and just ride our bikes all weekend, or, you know, get out in the hills and hike and all that sort of stuff. And so I think I'm kind of inherently drawn to that side of things, kind of the longer, more endurance focused events. And so it didn't seem like too much of a kind of a hurdle to think about jumping into something longer at Tarawera, particularly because a lot of the training we were doing in that process was just going and running trails, trails that exist and routes that are established. So one of the runs we would do in the mountains was like a Mount Solitary loop. And it was like a, you know, like a reasonably logical loop. If you're in the mountains, it has like a nice aesthetic, you know, big loop point to point. I guess the training I was doing was just reflecting that drive to want to go and do something a little bit longer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. That's awesome. And throughout that process as well, you've been coaching, kind of going a little bit more into it from 2018 for the running specifically. How mm-hmm. has your coaching kind of evolved? Where did you were starting in the gym, but when you're, I guess, speaking more specifically about the running side of things, do you feel as though the way you were coaching then is completely different to what you're doing now, or has there been kind of similar themes throughout that? And how has that sort of evolved over the last 10 or so years?
I think the word you just mentioned, and evolve, is like spot on. And I think that's true for a lot of coaches and, you know, coaching philosophies, is that you need to be able to evolve. You can't just consistently do the same thing over and over again and not be open to learning new ideas, engaging with different principles, and even like exploring kind of different markets. I think it's important, coming from that gym space and being face-to-face with clients. I think a big thing is knowing how to communicate with people and learning different communication styles and, I guess, what drives certain people. And so for me, early on, a lot of the strengths of like the coaching and the philosophies we were using were kind of communication based, specifically with remote or online coaching. You really need to be able to, you know, understand how to communicate with people, because you're not always face to face with people. So that's kind of been like a linchpin to a lot of like what we've been doing with coaching. And I guess the deeper you go into it, the more experience you accumulate coaching with people, with longer training blocks, you know, different races, being exposed to different personalities, all that sort of stuff. And so I think it's just about being open to new ideas, having a good foundation for what you believe in. So like principles, beliefs, that sort of stuff. But then also, just being open to exploring new ideas is a big thing for me.
No, that's cool. I think it's so interesting that seems to be such a focus, the communication side of things, because often, you know, you can do the research, you can learn the theory, you can understand the principles behind training, but, you know, people could just go and Google a program online for free and download it and follow it. But you've kind of got to figure out what are you getting from that versus what are you getting from someone who, can communicate well, understands you, knows your individual needs specifically. It just adds obviously a whole nother layer to it. So yeah, it's nice to see that side of things is more of the focus rather than just purely just the training side of things.
Yeah, I mean, you see it even in like a medical sense. You see people who go to doctors and, maybe the doctor is as knowledgeable as the next doctor, but if they're not delivering the message or maybe you don't feel like you're being heard, potentially there's a chance you go elsewhere, despite the fact that, you know, the general core information is very similar. So I think that speaks to a lot of what coaching is about, like learning how to deliver the message, but still not straying too far from your beliefs and your principles.
For sure. And are there parts of training or aspects of coaching people that you enjoy particularly? Are there, I don't know, maybe distances or events or personality types or challenges that come up that you really enjoy working through? Is there anything that you find, I don't know, brings you a little bit more joy than just another training program?
I just like seeing people challenge themselves. So, and generally that has nothing to do with distance, right? Because we all know that running a hard 5K can be harder than running 100 kilometers, in terms of the relative intensity. And so for me, it's just about seeing people challenge themselves, and then also seeing people have that buy-in, and that kind of emotional investment to what they're doing, I think is important. Because people come from all different walks of life, all different backgrounds. People have different jobs, different family situations. And it's kind of cool that, everyone comes together on the same day to try and execute something pretty similar, on race day. So for me, it's just about, yeah, seeing people take that step and want to pursue a challenge. And then, yeah, I guess pursuing that challenge with the hope of just bettering themselves day in, day out is probably, yeah, one of the key highlights for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And do you find it tricky to, I guess it's a blurry line, or it could be depending on the particular person, with, pursuing a challenge, pursuing something that's really hard or something you've never done before, or pushing your limits and going further than you ever thought, whether that's distance or intensity or pace or whatever it is, but not pushing people over that limit. Like, how do you find, that space between pushing them enough for what they need and encouraging them and motivating them and helping them guide to that, be guided to that point, but then not going over that, or maybe getting obsessive with it, or maybe, constantly pursuing more and more. How do you manage that?
I think the big thing is that for us, it's about, and I say us, my partner Michaela and I guess having the buy-in to long-term development. So we never want to take someone on board in the pursuit of achieving something crazy, when they don't have A, the foundation to do that, or B, it might jeopardize their capacity to develop in the long term. Like we have zero interest in that. So there's plenty of times where we may get an email saying, "Are you willing to help me do X event?" And then, you kind of dive into a little bit of the athlete's background, and their training age and all that sort of stuff. And it just doesn't seem like the right approach. And we don't feel like we're the right people to be guiding those people to those steps, because it almost feels like you're missing a few steps in the process. I imagine that's how like a hairdresser feels if someone gets comes in and wants like a shit haircut. You don't want to give someone a shit haircut, because everyone's going to say, "Who gave you that haircut?" So we don't want people standing on the start line injured, totally unprepared for the challenge they've set themselves. And I think that's an important one to remember. Like I think we're definitely in a running boom at the moment, and we tend to see a lot of people who are excited about running, which is amazing, and excited about pushing themselves. But at the same time, there also kind of appears to be a bit of a narrative bubbling under that you just have to be going longer and doing harder things consistently for things to matter. And that's just not the case. Like anyone that runs shorter distances know that those things are just as challenging, sometimes more challenging than running ultras. So I think it all comes back to the process of development and just making sure that you're actually looking after the athlete. Because if it's something you enjoy, chances are you want to be doing it longer term. And we just don't want to throw everything at the wall for, 8 to 10 weeks in the hope that it sticks for you not to be able to run, a year, 2 years down the track. So yeah, it's a little bit about learning, coming back to that communication point. So learning what makes people tick, and then potentially exploring if there are other avenues to I guess reach that point without diving too far down the rabbit hole, and missing all those important steps in the process.
No, I think that's a great way to look at it. And I think there is a real ego at the moment around, just doing harder things, doing longer things, running further and further and further. And, where's the end point to that? When does that
Totally.
become just, you just can't do any more? And when do you break down? So bringing it back to figuring out why you actually want to do it. Are you doing it for enjoyment, or is it to prove something to someone else? What is the reason behind that?
Totally. Yeah, totally. Things have changed. Yeah, things have changed a lot over the years. I think like social media is a big one. So we tend to see like the highlights package of what everyone's doing is running, but no one's recording like, getting out the door and running like shuffling at 8 or 9 minute pace just to get through the next day of training, like we don't see that sort of stuff. So it's exciting that there's a lot of people involved in running, but we just want to, like, for myself and Michaela, we just want to make sure that we're fostering like a healthy relationship with running, and that yeah, you're respecting like the long-term development, because health matters, and that should always come first.
For sure. And I guess being an online coach, you would see things differently to people who are just purely coaching in person as well. I guess it's a totally different way of looking at things. You're more, I guess, programming for the whole, as you said, long-term development and looking at things more broadly, whereas coaching in person might be more of a one-on-one session where you're doing that thing in the moment. I guess for people who are maybe looking for an online coach, maybe they're looking for a program, they're looking for some guidance, obviously we'll have your links below, definitely recommend. But if people are looking for someone, what sort of things should they look for in terms of getting a coach? Is it their qualifications? Is it their experience? Is it, you know, getting along in terms of personality types? What do you think, I guess, really encourages a healthy and good relationship between a coach and an athlete?
I think it's about finding someone that not necessarily meets you on your level, but someone that you feel like has your best interests at heart. So someone that can give you the time that you deserve, someone that actually, I guess, has a, like I talked about emotional investment before from the athlete side, but I think it's important for a coach to have that same emotional investment going back the other way. And that's something that I think gets lost a lot, is that as coaches, we care a lot about like what our athletes are doing, and those race days are real highs and real lows for us as well, riding that high and low. So I think it's about finding someone that you know is there for you, that cares about what you're doing, that respects the process of that long-term development, like we were just speaking about. And then also has like a genuine interest in the space that you're in as well. So whether that's on the road, on the track, on the trails, marathoning, ultras, anything like that. Yeah, someone that's actively invested in that process and in that community, I think is a really good place to start. And then from there, I guess you can ask questions around potentially how many clients people are coaching, you know, how much space they actually have to give you during the week, what those contact hours look like, how they like to communicate, all of that sort of stuff matters.
Yeah, no, for sure. I really like that. So in today's episode, now that we've got a bit more understanding, I'd love to talk specifically about trail 50K runs, if people are training for maybe their first 50K, or maybe they've done a few and they're looking to improve. Obviously, we can talk Tarawera specifically, but just more broadly, when someone is training for a 50K, maybe they've done a marathon before, or maybe they've skipped that and they're just going straight to the 50. Are there some general, I guess, overarching principles or things that people need to consider if we're just thinking about, obviously it's individual to each person, but if we're thinking about a relatively new runner looking to do their first ultra, maybe they're 4 to 6 months out from the event, what should they begin to start thinking about in terms of how those next few months are going to look?
I think for those that are new to the space, I think it's important to think about like what problem are you trying to solve? And so that's something that we look at in coaching all the time. An athlete comes to you and they say, I've got Tarawera, you know, in 18 weeks. And so you sit down and you think, well, what problem are we trying to solve between now and 18 weeks time? And for new runners, usually that's just a question of getting to the end of the race, right? So the distance is the problem. Maybe experienced runners who have a lot of experience over longer distances, and maybe they're stepping down to a 50 kilometer, the distance won't be the issue. And so potentially the problem you're trying to solve is speed. How do I make my race pace faster? You know, how do I get up these hills quicker? All that sort of stuff. But for the, I guess, for the general recreational runner looking to step up, it's about working out how do you bridge the gap between where you are now to where you need to be on race day. Depending on what 50K race you're doing, the amount of time that you're going to be out there could really, really be different between, say, 50 kilometers at Tarawera versus 50Ks like at UTA out here in the Blue Mountains. So I think it's a question of working out how do you plug those gaps? How do you kind of answer the question of, you know, I'm not training much now, but I need to get to the end of a 50K in X amount of time. And so it's that process of looking at breaking things down from a macro cycle all the way down to micro mesocycles. And for, I guess, for newer runners, it's kind of ticking the frequency box. So if you're looking at a week, say Monday to Sunday, trying to get as many runs as possible done in that week. So you've kind of got, I guess, more fingers in the pie, so to speak. And then from there, you'd be looking at potentially increasing the amount of running you're doing. So increasing the volume of your running through those frequent sessions throughout the week. And lastly, and definitely lastly for the newer runners, you'd be looking at how you can apply intensity to those two things. It's definitely something that should come last for newer runners, just because you've got so much space to build, and aerobic development takes a long time, you know, 10 years or so. So you don't really need to be touching on too much intensity early on, and particularly if you're new to the ultra sphere. You really just want to be solving the problem of getting out frequently throughout the week and then increasing the amount of running you can tolerate throughout the week. And you're just looking at doing that consistently from A to B.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. And I think, yeah, people, I mean, there's a lot of talk about zone 2 at the moment.
Sorry.
There's so much. But yes, having that aerobic base is key, especially for this kind of distance. That's going to be your main energy system, so it makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I guess when you're a beginner and you've got so much to think about and you're thinking about gear and nutrition and trying to fit all the training runs in, like then adding some intensity on top of that or trying to figure out sessions is just a whole nother thing to complicate things, and obviously might even increase your injury risk and all those other things as well. So I think being able to understand that you don't need to do that is probably quite a relief for a lot of people if they know that they can just do their kind of easy jogging pace, as long as they're covering the distances that they need to cover, getting in the weekly mileage, doing those frequent sessions or runs. That's probably a bit of a relief. And I think a question that a lot of people have, and I know that there's no one answer for everyone, but a lot of people would want to know, how far should their longest run be? Should they be running 50Ks before the 50K so they know that they can do it? Should they do half the distance? Like where does that sit, or how would you guide people in understanding how that would work for them specifically?
It's a good question. And honestly, we probably get this question maybe a couple of times a month from people. But I think the key thing for us to try to communicate is that it's less about distance and more about time. So our bodies respond and adapt to time at various intensities. And like I mentioned before, 50 kilometers in the Blue Mountains versus 50 Ks at Tarawera may be very different in terms of the amount of time you're out there on race day. And so for us, it's about looking to increase the amount of time you can tolerate in running. I know specifically for you in your build, we probably hit 4 hours, I want to say twice, and then a lot of time spent between 3 and 4 hours for those long runs specifically. Yeah. And so, yeah, in terms of thinking, do I need to be hitting the distance before race day? I would say definitely not, particularly as a new runner and even as someone who is experienced, just because the cost of doing that is so high. And you want to look at training as being, I guess, on a continuum, in that what you do today shouldn't stop you from getting out the door doing what you need to do tomorrow. And that process just rolls on if you're looking at training as a continuum and not just like a start and end point. So definitely avoid doing the distance just to see if you can do the distance. You want to accumulate a lot of time, you know, work through accumulating fatigue, building that resilience to running. And then hopefully you get yourself to a point where after you've tapered off and freshened up a little bit, that you do have the capacity to cover the distance on race day. Because like I mentioned before, in terms of what problem are you trying to solve, for a lot of people coming to ultras, their race pace ends up being sometimes minutes slower than like their easy pace, you know? So it's not a question of speed and not a question of velocity in terms of how fast can I get to the finish. It's a question of how long can I sustain, you know, a certain effort from A to B.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I think it's quite logical to base it on time as well. Because as you said, like there are just so many variables, and depending on where you're running, it's going to change so much. I know for me, I think the time between my UTA and Tarawera times is like, it's definitely more than 2 hours. So it's like a totally different thing to even think about. So yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Just a little side tangent that you've just reminded me of. If someone who, maybe they're really busy, maybe they've got 5 kids and they're working full time and they don't have time potentially to block out a full 3, 4+ hours, how would you suggest they go about getting in that training volume? You know, maybe they can obviously increase their frequency. Would you do a double day if they had the time in the morning and the afternoon, split up, or would you suggest back-to-back training runs? Have you come across that issue before? And I guess any ideas on how to go about working through that?
Yeah, we've definitely come across that. That's something we come across quite frequently with people who shift work, or people who have large families, like you said, or busy jobs that require them to travel. And so there's a few different ways of looking at it. And it is, I know people hate this, but it is specific to the individual. And so there's definitely different ways to construct that process. For some people, that's a case of saying, instead of doing 3 hours in the morning, you know, I don't have the time to do 3 hours, but potentially I can get out for 90 minutes and then another 90 minutes later on when I get back from home. Potentially that's the way you solve that problem. Maybe they have some capacity to get out the day after. And so you can kind of work on back-to-back longer runs. You just need to look at, I guess, risk versus reward with this sort of stuff. And for a lot of people, potentially inducing a lot of volume when they're already under fatigue isn't a great idea anyway. So if you're looking at like the drivers of fitness, you just want to work out what makes sense on a risk versus reward basis, and then also what makes sense for their schedules. So yeah, splitting that long run is a good one. You know, some people may argue that you know, the hour from 2 to 3 is more valuable than, you know, the hour between 30 minutes and 90 minutes, if that makes sense, in terms of adaptations. But at the end of the day, if you can get the volume in and you're consistent over a long period of time, you're doing the best job that you can in your circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. That's helpful. If someone's thinking about doing a 50K, maybe they haven't signed up for one, they're not really sure, they're just kind of toying with the idea. Do you have kind of a rough time frame that you would suggest to begin a runner? Like, let's say that they've done a couple of half marathons, maybe they've done a few long runs around that 30, 35K before. They're thinking about signing up. How long would you suggest allowing someone to train for one? I know often people will sign up for something or there will be a last minute decision and they're kind of panicking and cramming. But let's say that this person is super organized and they're thinking any time in the future. What would you sort of suggest in terms of timeframes?
It's a good question. I think, again, it comes down to the individual, but like as a rough time frame, if you, as a coach, like we selfishly want more time with people because you want to be able to develop them, I guess, safely and not have the date in the calendar as a stressor and be the thing that drives how you frame training in terms of we have to get X done before this date. So if you've got, I guess, more of a natural flow of training, you know, 18 weeks is a pretty decent amount of time to be able to build someone depending on where they're coming from, assuming they've done like kind of what you hinted at then, which was like the training to do the training. So they've got themselves into a position where, you know, they are running consistent long runs. They are running frequently throughout the week and they've been consistent with their training over a number of weeks. Then that 18 week period is great because it gives you the capacity to explore a few different things, a few different concepts within training. And it also gives you the time for to address kind of any hiccups or hurdles if they happen. And I know like specifically for you, that was a bit of a blessing in that we had the time because you had that ankle roll probably 7 weeks out, 8 weeks out maybe. I think it was 7 weeks out.
Yeah.
From the race. And so it gives you that time, you know, if you do encounter any obstacles in that training block, that you do have a little bit longer to develop. But generally the more time, the better. The more time you can give yourself, the better, because it does allow you to work through, you know, different phases of training and just get your fitness up to a point where you're ready for the demands of the race.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think, yeah, people are often sort of asking, when should I start training? Or they've got, yeah, a date in the calendar when they're going to start. No, I'm going to start next week. But it's like, why not just start today? And you don't have to do anything crazy today, but just at least start laying that foundation, getting some good habits in, building a base early. Because, yeah, what have you got to lose? I think, I think you often get to a start line thinking, I wish I had more time, or I didn't do enough, or I couldn't do this because it was so rushed. So yeah, starting a bit earlier, I think makes sense. And on the topic of hiccups, like when things do come up, people roll their ankles, or like that time I got that weird heat stroke or whatever the virus was, things like that happen. And I think in the moment, especially if it means that you can't do your long run, which I think when you're training for an ultra feels like the key session, that feels like the priority. How do you communicate with the athletes to get them to understand that, yes, that's frustrating, and yes, it's a shame that you're missing a key session, and if it's, you know, 4, 6, 8 weeks out, that's probably quite important time to be getting some consistent training in. How do you allow the athletes to, I guess, feel that frustration, but also help them to understand that that's not going to make or break the race, and that, you know, you've allowed for that within the programming?
Yeah, like you mentioned, I think you want people to feel like they're being heard, which is important. And then it's just a process of zooming out. We get so stuck in our ways, you know, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, that sort of stuff, being caught up in little moments and thinking that little moments matter. But if you take the time to stop and zoom out and look at what you've done, you know, over a longer period of time, we mentioned 18 weeks, just zoom out, look at what you've done over 18 weeks, you know, potentially a 72-hour period of illness is a very, very small percentage of your total training hours. So I think it's a case of, instead of looking at the stuff that you haven't been able to do, look at what you have done. Because I think obviously an important part of training and engaging the training is developing the confidence to take into race day. And a really good way of developing confidence is consistently looking at the stuff that you have been able to do and knowing that you've been able to walk away from certain sessions and certain long runs feeling good and not letting those small hiccups like illness or maybe little niggles that force you out of running for a few days, not letting them dictate how you feel about the total preparation that you've done. So zooming out is probably a key thing for us, just not getting stuck in the weeds.
Yeah, that's cool. I think, yeah, looking at it as that percentage of time, as you said, like it's a few hours out of however much time you're putting aside to training. Yeah, I think it is hard when you're in the moment and when that is such a focus of yours and that's such a, you know, you're thinking about it a lot when you're sitting at home at 8 a.m. on a Sunday when you would have been out running. It can be a bit frustrating, but yeah, looking at the bigger picture, I think makes a lot of sense.
Sometimes it's a blessing as well, in that you encounter some obstacles and hurdles in training and you navigate that process, because inherently race day is that just condensed into, you know, 50 kilometers, whatever distance you're doing. So it does offer you the opportunity to be able to engage with the process of problem solving and working out actually the steps you need to take to get where you need to be. So it can be a little bit of a blessing sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, yeah, understanding how to, yeah, go through hard things, tackle them, get around them, navigate that. It's relevant for life, but yeah, also relevant for the race itself. So it makes a lot of sense. Okay, so time for me to be a little bit selfish. I want to talk about me for a while. So Tarawera 50K happened last weekend. We started working together. I'm just having a look at Training Peaks about mid-October. Mm-hmm. I guess I'd love to understand a little bit of your thought process. You know, I got in touch. We were talking about what we were going to do. What do you kind of initially think about when you're planning for someone's program? Are you kind of looking at what they've been doing previously and applying that and just making some tweaks? Are you going in with just a completely new idea and putting your own spin on things? How do you, I guess, initiate that first month of training? How does that look?
I think the first month of training, it's a really good question. It's a little bit of looking at what the athlete has done in the past. So people are obviously coming to us and they've been training consistently and they're, you know, they're getting fitter, they're getting faster, they're getting stronger. So you don't want to just take someone and completely change everything because that process is obviously working for them. So that's part of it. The other thing is just preparing to be adaptable and I guess be fluid in that first month of training. And knowing that there'll be a little bit of, I guess, give and take. So it'll be a little bit of the coach learning how the athlete does things and a little bit of the athlete learning how the coach does things. So it's definitely a two-way street. For me, when I take someone on, like you, I think we started 16th of October thereabouts. Mm-hmm. It's about seeing how you respond to the training that you're consistently already doing and then looking at what gaps we need to plug to get you from where you are now to where you needed to be, you know, last weekend at Tarawera. So it's very much a fluid period that first month. It's a lot of time going back and looking at the stuff that you've done in the past and then also looking at, yeah, like what problem we're trying to solve. So you obviously came to me with you know, the idea that you wanted to get to Tarawera and do a really good job at Tarawera. So part of that first month is just looking at how we need to, I guess, tweak training and what sort of concepts we might need to introduce to get you from where you are to where you need to be and where you want to be.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think, yeah, I was really looking for that, I guess, structure and also just kind of unbiased or objective opinion. Like I think I'd been, well, I know I had been just writing my own program or just doing what I wanted for however long, which is fine and it's fun and it's nice to be spontaneous and have that freedom to just do whatever you want. But I definitely felt as though I could do with that extra edge and I could do with someone else just telling me what to do. And it was so nice to be able to just look at my phone or look at my watch and just go, oh, cool, like this is what I'm doing today, rather than, like, I think I didn't realize how much brain space it was taking for me to think about my training. And I think at the time my shifts with work were really random too. So I'd be like, oh, I've randomly got 4 hours. I can go for an extra run. Or I've randomly got this time. Or now I've got no, like, it was just always, there was just so much of my brain going, oh, when should I run this week? What should I do? How far should I go? Whereas just having someone telling you, it's like, it just takes a big weight off your shoulders. So that, like, initially for me, that was a big change that I noticed, and I really appreciated that. And I think pretty early on when we started, I then decided to do some random races, which I don't know how you felt about it, but that was, I guess I have that feeling of, like, I do want to just do everything and I just want to be a part of everything, which has probably hindered me in the past. How do you go when, yeah, someone says, okay, this is the thing I'm doing? And I think, like, I was thinking I was going to be really just, like, zoned in on that, and that was it for the next few months. How do you feel about when people just throw random events at you and just go, I'm going to actually do this random thing that I hadn't told you about?
Well, I think you had, looking back, I think you had, like, close to 3 races in 4 weeks. And that's not something, if I was taking you from scratch, that I'd say, hey, I've got this great plan. We're going to run, you know, 3 races in the next month. But it comes back to, like, my first principle is enjoyment. Mm-hmm. And if you're not enjoying what you're doing, I think you need to stop and have a think about, why are you actually doing this? You know, running, training shouldn't be, like, it shouldn't be a punishment. It shouldn't be something that you feel like you have to do. It should be something that you feel like you want to do. You know, we're not, like, earning paychecks off running. We're not sponsored, getting pressured to race and hit certain splits and qualify for the Olympics. And so I think if you're not enjoying what you're doing, then, yeah, stopping and thinking about that is really important. And for me, if I have someone like you say, hey, I'm signed up for, you know, GNW 30K, and then I've got Narrowneck Night Run, and then I'm going to go down to Stromwo. I'm like, that's amazing. That tells me, A, you love running, you enjoy what you do. B, you want to be involved in the community and in that race environment. And it just means that we can use those opportunities, slightly differently in training. So it's definitely not a case of saying, you know, I've got 3 races in a month and I'm going to absolutely hammer myself in all of them. It's a case of saying, are there certain opportunities where we can push a little bit harder? Potentially we need to dial things back in this race relative to where we are. I think it all comes back to, you know, enjoyment and just understanding that what makes people tick. We talked about communication before and learning different communication styles. I think it would have been just a crime of me to say, like, no, like, what are you doing? We can't do those 3 races. Because if it's something you enjoy, then absolutely you should pursue that. There's just certain ways that you can modify things and tweak things to make them work for what is your primary goal, or what was your primary goal, which was Tararua.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever say no to people? You just mentioned then, like, it would have been a crime if I said no. Do you have those times where you have to tell people
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And it comes back to what we were talking about before in terms of long-term development. So, you know, if you've got someone saying, I want to go and run a marathon, you know, in 10 weeks, and then 6 weeks out, they're thinking, oh, I just got this offer to go run 100 kilometers. What do you think? And then say, well, like, initially when you came to me, the goal was to run the marathon. And running that 100K is definitely going to impact your capacity to do what you want to do at the marathon. So I think it's about coming back to the primary goal, understanding what that goal is. And if there's something that is, like, just stupid, like, we'll call it out for sure because we care. And if there's something that we feel like could be done a little bit differently, then definitely. Some people say, you know, I want to go down. If you said I wanted to go down and do Stromwo 50K, potentially I would have said, hey, they do a 30-kilometer race. That's a great opportunity, you know, and that's where you landed. Anyway, we didn't even have to have that conversation, which is great. So definitely there's times that we say no and you push back on things, but it's not from a, like, an authority's, like, you know, do as I say, dictating stance. It's more of a just that we care and that we do want to see you develop, and we want to see you do the right things and not hinder your chances or your potential at the thing that you did sign up for and that you did say you were quite invested in the process. So,
Yeah, cool. And something else that you introduced pretty early, I think week 1 into my program, was strides, which was something I'd kind of played around with randomly but never really given it much thought. What are your thoughts behind strides? For people listening, what are strides? Why should they include them? And, I guess, why was that kind of introduced week 1?
So it's generally one of the first things we do. If we take someone like you who has a good background in running, and we are looking at kind of how we tweak the intensity and how we layer some intensity into your training, it's usually one of the first things we do just to get the legs turning over and starting to kind of build some of those neuromuscular pathways, so brain-body connection, and get you comfortable with the idea of running fast and making I guess, faster running feel a little bit smoother. I think when we talk about running fast, there's definitely a distinction between running fast and running hard. It's very easy to run hard. You can, you know, head out the front door, put your shoes on and just run extremely hard. Chances are you may not run very fast, or you may not run for a very long period of time. So it's about teaching you to embrace that feeling of making fast running feel a little bit smoother, more economical. And it also sets a bit of a bridge and a bit of a stepping stone to harder workouts down the track. So in terms of, I guess, the first phase that we had of training was a little bit different in that you had those three races. So the amount of intensity we did was distributed just a little bit differently. But those strides were kind of introduced as a little bit of a stepping stone to more intensity down the track. In terms of actually how we did those strides, so there's a few different ways you can do them. Strides, surges, pickups, however people turn them. It's easy to kind of get lost in the semantics, but a lot of kind of 20 to 30 second, I guess, periods of smoother, faster running with a few minutes between, just to bring your heart rate down, let you recover, bring some freshness back to the legs before exposing yourself to that pace again. So yeah, we were doing, I think from memory, looking back, 20 to 30 second surges, 6, 8 or so.
Yeah.
Usually towards the end of a run as well, sometimes in the middle of a run. We kind of say, like, if there's a location that makes sense for you, sometimes people might run to an oval. They'll use that oval as a chance to get their legs turning over. But it's all about just introducing faster running in a pretty safe manner. And then also as a little bit of a stepping stone for intensity further on down the track.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And I really enjoyed it. I think there is a nice feeling of running faster, particularly when you are training for a longer distance. You are doing a lot of slow, easy jogs, shuffling along. So it is nice to feel like, oh, I can actually move a little bit better than I normally do. So I think just from a mental point of view, it's quite nice and kind of refreshing to do. So I really enjoyed that. I'm just thinking about deloads now. So obviously we had those three races and then I did the more than a run 30K as well. So it was kind of, there's a lot going on in that first month.
Mm-hmm.
When you're thinking about deloads, is this something that you program, what's the word? I'm thinking reactive, but the reverse of that. So some people do it reactively where they're like,
okay, being proactive versus reactive.
Yeah, proactive. That's the one. Yeah, where do you sit on that? Is that something that you are proactive with or more reactive?
It kind of depends. I think it's very easy for people to look at training and the training structures and think that the correct way to layer training is by maybe doing, you know, 2 weeks up, 1 week down, looking at things in like a calendar cycle. But I mentioned before, like, training is a continuum. So our bodies don't necessarily care for what day it is, the date in the calendar, Monday to Sunday. You don't wake up and think, it's Thursday, so I'm going to do this, if you feel like absolute trash, but you've got a harder hill workout session. So I think it's important to be fluid and adaptable with that sort of stuff. And in saying that, it's not always a week where you think, I'm going to program, you know, seven days of reduced running. And it's going to allow our body to adapt to the training we've previously done and allow you to absorb more training moving on. Like, chances are it probably will, but potentially you could stack 3 days back to back of really lower volume and you'll have probably a similar response. So again, it's about the individual learning how they respond to training. Some people handle different training stimuluses differently. If it makes sense for some people to structure it in their brain as being like, this week I'm going to take really easy, and that's a nice way for them to mentally frame their training, then for sure go with it. But I think it's important just to be fluid with how you program that stuff and know that, you know, maybe it is you're just backing off for 3 or 4 days and then you can get back into a longer run on the weekend, or maybe you're loading up the front of the week and then the second half of your week is a little bit quieter. So I think it's just about being fluid, being adaptable, but they're also understanding that they are important, and they're important periods to have because they do allow you to absorb the work you've done. And then also, like I said before, freshen you up a little bit to handle more work ongoing.
Mm, yeah, cool. I like that perspective. And I think we had kind of a transition week in between some blocks, which would be kind of what you're talking about there. Mm-hmm. And then we moved into more of a steady state block. So For those listening, what is steady state? What does that mean? I guess previously we were kind of doing, yeah, kind of figuring things out, as you said, had those random races in, testing a few different things. And then you moved me into that steady state block in December. What's the idea behind that?
So I guess like going back a couple of steps, we started with intensity while we had the time that was relatively non-specific to Tarawera. So, you know, 3-minute hills, 4-minute hills, running quite hard. At the core of it, that intensity is relatively non-specific to going and running, you know, 53 kilometers at like 7-minute pace. But what it does allow you to do is develop everything under that intensity and elevate everything under that intensity. I guess the simple way of looking at things is like use it or lose it. Like we hear that a little bit. So what you don't do frequently, you tend to lose. So early on, while we have the time, we like to work on the non-specifics because we know that as we trend closer towards the event, we're going to start to work more specifically on the things that directly support that event. So lots of easier running, all-day pace, that sort of stuff. And that kind of transitioned us through a threshold block and into like a block of what I guess we call steady state running. It's a bit of a funny intensity. It's actually probably, in terms of like remote coaching, it's one of the harder ones to communicate just because it is, I guess it's not tied to any like physiological parameter really. Whereas if you go and run close to your VO2 max, you know that that's closely aligned with, you know, stressing VO2 max, same deal with threshold. Steady state's a little bit different. For the 50K, I think it's a great intensity in that you tend to use a lot of it on race day. You can accumulate a lot of volume of it in training throughout the week. And it is, like I said, specific to your race, to your 50K. So people are probably wondering what the hell does steady state mean? And it's easy to get caught up in semantics because, you know, there's 50 different terms for 50 different things. And so for steady state, the way we kind of look at it is like an effort that you're probably sustaining for anywhere from 2 to 3 hours. And for a lot of people, if you're just, you know, really low on the development side of things and you're looking to get into to your first ultra, it's probably not an intensity you'd touch too much of because you're just looking to increase the amount of volume that you can handle. But if you've got a decent backing, then yeah, it's probably that 2 to 3 hour effort. Sometimes it's closer to marathon effort for a lot of people. It tends to be like, yeah, aerobic threshold, I guess what people kind of call LT1 these days. But it's a nice intensity in that it directly supports what you're doing in that 50K distance and distances above as well and below. And it is, yeah, obviously specific to what you do. So it provides you the opportunity with engaging with the rhythm of that pace, the rhythm of that effort, fueling under those conditions. Yeah, that's kind of a broad answer to a topic that is pretty broad in itself.
Mm. Yeah. And I think, yeah, it does get confusing with, yeah, all the different names for things. And yeah, there's a lot of terms out there. So it does get a little bit confusing. But I think, yeah, as long as you're able to communicate what that means for that specific athlete, then I think it makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I personally enjoyed that phase of training. Then we had New Year's Eve was the ankle sprain, which was actually ended up being pretty good. Like in terms of ankle sprains, like I was back relatively quickly, so it wasn't that bad. But it is a bit scary in the moment. You're thinking like, oh, how long are we going to be out for? How bad is this going to be? So we had a few rest days after that and then sort of eased back into it. And then round the bay, which is that 36K run on the coast, which felt pretty good from memory. Mm-hmm. And then from there, the following week is when so this was kind of back-to-back issues. We had the ankle sprain, then had a good long run the week after, and then the week after was the heat stroke, which was still wild. Like I've never experienced something like that. That knocked me out for a while. So we had a few bumps in the road at that point, and I was kind of starting to think like, oh, this is where I should be really starting to build, where I should be really getting some good mileage in, some good long runs, should be feeling good. And there was a few kind of hiccups and doubts within that. And I think for me as well, like using Training Peaks, if anyone hasn't used Training Peaks, it's kind of a color-coded system. If you do the run as prescribed, it comes up green. If you don't do it at all, it's red. And if you do it slightly longer or shorter, it's yellow or orange. And I think for me, like seeing the green makes me quite happy. Yeah. And when it's not green, I don't feel that happy. Have you had that with other people before where I think we were talking about it earlier with, I guess, being intuitive or fluid or, yeah, not just thinking like, okay, I've got this session, do I have to do it? How do you go with people who really, I don't know, tend to be more geared towards that, the OCD type tendencies, or they really struggle when it's not perfect.
Yep.
How do you let people know that it's okay if it's not perfect?
Like, we definitely have those people, and it's not a bad thing. It's not a negative thing at all. That's just how some people operate. And I think it's kind of interesting dealing with people who have obviously different responses to how things are. And so I think the color coding thing is great for some people in that it can be like a motivator and it can build a lot of positive momentum. It can also do the exact opposite with other people. And so it comes back to, like I mentioned, learning the best way to deliver the message and communicate with people. And so honestly, for some people who are like, look at training as being like a binary, like a win or loss, in terms of hitting sessions, there's definitely times where we might structure runs to be a lot more flexible. So they're not actually getting, you know, that negative reinforcement if they're not hitting things perfectly. And that might be something as simple as just not actually allocating the time in the workout. So maybe just commenting the time elsewhere so the algorithm doesn't pick up the time and think you were 30 minutes under, you know, how's this yellow feel? and so it will cop this red, you know? So I think it's about knowing the audience, but then also being able to communicate that the output of this stuff is only as good as the input, and that the colors and the algorithms and all the numbers are really only a very, very small part of the picture. And the more important part of the picture is actually how the athlete is feeling day-to-day training, the things that they're consistently doing and how they're responding to the work that you're giving them. Because it's very easy to be ticking things off and maybe having, you know, a week of greens only to get to the end of the week to realize that the athlete's actually been struggling with like a knee injury, or potentially they're just hating running and they're not enjoying it. So the data is like a very small piece of the picture. I think for a lot of people, they like engaging with the data. It can be a really good thing. It can also be a really, really negative thing. So I think it's about understanding your audience and learning about, you know, how much stuff, how much of that you feed them and how much of that stuff you just hold on to or just push to the side, knowing that it may actually be a hindrance from their path of getting to where they need to be.
Yeah, I think data, it can be great. I mean, it's the same as social media. It can be great, can be detrimental. Yeah, I guess just use it in the way that I guess serves you best. So yeah, we had a few hiccups, but nothing too dramatic. And then got a few solid long runs in. And then I had my trip to Japan. So prior to that, my final long run was about 4 hours. I remember that day being so hot, which I know like it's just been hot for weeks, so it's like nothing new. But I remember that day particularly being a bit of a struggle. And then I headed overseas, which is a bit random, but I think it worked out okay. I think the timing of, you know, when you've got other things going on in life, or you've got holidays or, I don't know, weddings or things like that happening, if you can work around it and still get everything done that you need to, I think that's okay. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the timing of it. So I think, just looking at the calendar now, so the last long run I did was Friday the 26th of Jan.
26th, yep.
Yeah, and then was overseas for the next 3 weeks, with the last part of that being Tararua. How do you think that worked timing-wise in terms of me not really being sure what I was going to be able to do and kind of just doing random runs throughout that time?
It's honestly like as I mentioned before, like we're not going to the Olympics and we don't need to rely on race results to put food on the table. And so if someone's got a holiday booked, like perfect. The fact that you had that booked literally as our taper was starting is fine. It was probably best case scenario, to be fair. It allowed us to build like a decent amount of volume, a lot of training stress leading into that Japan trip. And then it also enabled you to switch off a little bit from what you've been doing for the last 16 weeks, which I think is important as well. A lot of people get bogged down in running just being, you know, the one thing they do, and maybe they hedge a lot of their identity against what they're doing running day to day. But if you don't have other interests, it can be a pretty slippery slope in terms of your actual relationship with running and how healthy that is. Mm. So to see you, you know, stack a lot of good training and then go to Japan and snowboard, like, awesome. That's so good. I know you're going to be happy. You're going to be enjoying yourself over there. You know, by the time you get off the snow and you end up traveling to New Zealand, you're probably going to be looking forward to getting back into, like, you know, some running, which is good because, you know, 53Ks is a long way. So it's important to be excited about what you're doing. So in terms of timing, it's perfect. But, you know, hypothetically, had that holiday been booked, you know, 4 or 5 weeks earlier, there's definitely ways that you can manipulate training and make things work for you in terms of building up and then rebuilding after a bit of time off. So, you know, there's no right way, no right or wrong way to do things. But I think the important thing is that you're a little bit more one-dimensional than just focused on running. And it does mean that your headspace with running is good when you come back to it, because generally you're excited to get back into things.
Yeah, it's interesting, like the whole headspace talk. I think, yeah, it was really nice to be separate from it and to be thinking about other things and be distracted and excited by other things. But there was also a part of me that a few weeks in, or maybe halfway through, was starting to think like, and I'm sure this is just a normal taper thought that a lot of people had, is kind of like, can I still run? Like, did I really do those runs? Like, I was a few days after that final long run and I kind of just forgot about it. I was like, when did I even do a long, like, I don't even think I can run 20Ks. Like, you can't. And I'm sure that's just a regular taper thought that people would have. And yeah, I think tapering is quite hard for a lot of people. And, you know, going from just spending so much time training all the time, and then all of a sudden you might cut it in half, or you're doing way less than you were before. And yeah, unless you've got other things to distract you, or you've got other hobbies or other sports that you do, then it is really hard to maintain your sanity and just not question everything and have that doubt of, can I still do it? Did I actually do all those things, or did I make that up? Like, yeah, I'm sure you've probably had that experience with other clients before.
It's a tricky period. I think it's about learning how different people respond. So some people really enjoy taper and they really like building training up to a point where they've accumulated a lot of, you know, good functional fatigue, and they're going to need that taper period to absorb it and then be at a new level for race day. There's other people that are, I guess, maybe more holistic with their running, and they're not pushing things so much in their training that they need to get to a period of, you know, 2 weeks or 10 days where they absolutely have to back off training. And you can maintain like a reasonably decent training load heading into like a longer race. I think it obviously depends on the individual, but like usually with longer races, my kind of thoughts are you can get away with doing a little bit less of a taper just because the relative intensity is much lower. Whereas something like a, you know, maybe like a 5K race on the track, you'd want to be going in with, you know, a little bit of freshness to be able to perform, just because the relative intensity is so much higher. So yeah, it's about, like I said before, like learning what makes people tick, understanding that maybe, you know, if you remove running from their week and you try and strip back the volume in the hope that they'll freshen up, but it puts them into a spin cycle and they hate it, then you've probably done way more harm than good there. So yeah, I think it's about understanding just how people respond to training, and you get a pretty good idea early on as to what kind of makes people tick, and if people are going to respond well to a taper, or whether or not it'll start to send them into a bit of a spiral.
Yeah, for sure. And then obviously following the taper, it's the big day, the culmination of everything we just worked on. It's the priority, it's the focus, it's the big thing. I was there and I was like, I've flown overseas to go for a run, like that's a bit wild, like who does that? So yeah, the day happened, and I don't even know how I feel about it reflecting on it. And I, to be honest, people have asked me, how did it go, how do you feel, how was it? And I think you said something about when we were speaking on the phone before the event, like, how do you feel about it? And I was like, oh, I'm not sure, I'm kind of excited, kind of nervous. And you're like, yeah, it doesn't have to be one thing, like it can be multiple things. And I think that's how I feel about it following the event. Like, I think it went well. I think there are things I could have changed. There are things I could have done better. I think I'd probably always feel like that. And I probably, to be honest, it's probably going to sound really bad after we just spent this whole time talking about it, but probably don't really care that much. Like, I think I enjoyed the last month, like the last however long we've been training, so much. And there were so many cool moments along that way. And I had some great runs with some friends and really enjoyed the structure of it and the accountability and the process of the training. I'm kind of like, yeah, the 50K was cool. Like, it was great. And like, the scenery was amazing, but like, I don't really care, which is a weird thing to say out loud and to say when you have a running podcast. Like, but I think I got so much more out of the previous months than I did out of that day. Like, that day was really cool and it was fun and it was amazing. And I really pushed myself, and I definitely felt the best I felt in an ultra, especially towards the end, like that kind of 35 to 40K, I felt the strongest that I felt, and I felt like I could keep going. Mm-hmm. Last few Ks were a bit rough, but up until kind of 45, yeah, I felt really strong. So I think that's a win. But I think overall, like, yeah, it was cool, but I'm kind of just keen to go for a run again. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's an interesting, I haven't quite fully reflected on it completely, but I think overall I'm happy, but kind of don't care in a way, if that
it's really doesn't offend you. It's funny because like you're speaking and you sound a lot like this is how I talk to myself as well. I think I'm very much a process over outcome kind of person. And a lot of people we coach are as well. And they just help, they kind of have the outcome as something that helps frame the training and helps kind of compartmentalize that process. And so if you're not inherently like a very super competitive person and you're not standing on the start line, looking around at the person next to you thinking like, I can't wait to towel this person up, you know, I'm going to run so much faster than this person, or you don't have that mindset, then race day really can just be like a bit of a stamp at the end of a really good block of training where you spent, you know, 12 to 18 weeks developing and getting better. And the outcome doesn't necessarily have to reflect the processes that you've been through. Sometimes, you know, you walk away from like a longer endurance event and you don't really know how you feel about it because you got yourself to the point where training was so good and you were responding, you know, really well to things. And you've definitely removed that question of, can I make it to the finish? So it's less about complete. And then if you're not thinking compete, then you're wondering, well, how do I frame this day? You know, I don't necessarily care about where I finish in the field. I know I can finish this race. So I think then it's about embracing the experience and enjoying what you're doing, you know, maybe enjoying running with people you haven't run with before, taking in some of the tracks, some of the sites that you probably haven't seen before, just trying to, I guess, build some memories in the moment and be in the moment, because it's very easy to get to race day and forget about all of that. And then you end up crossing the finish line thinking like, what did I just do for, you know, six hours? Like, did I even enjoy that? I don't know. I think it's, for me, like hearing you say that just tells me that you've got a really good relationship with running generally, and that you don't let results dictate how you feel about your running or how you feel about yourself as a person, which is definitely a bit of a super slope to go down. A lot of people tend to let their results kind of reflect who they are as people, when at the core of it, like generally people don't care. And if you do care, then it just tells me that you love the process, you love running, and that whatever outcome comes your way on race day doesn't change any of that, which I think is a really good thing.
How do you approach it if someone is the other way, if they're really goal orientated, really focused on that event, they've got this target, and then it all goes wrong, everything goes wrong, they don't get it, they're really disappointed? What do you say to them in that moment if you're having that conversation or reflecting on the race? Yeah, how do you communicate that it is okay, and I guess get them to understand that what they've done is still great, or what do you say in that moment?
Yeah, I guess sometimes people do walk away from races with where experiences weren't as they would have hoped, and I think for some people that can be a case of maybe writing the story before they get there. So thinking about what a perfect race looks like and then not being open to things being slightly different on the day. So I think the week before I spoke to you on the phone and I said that that like highs will follow lows will follow highs. You know, things don't follow this linear process of I'm feeling great from kilometers 0 to 30 and then from kilometer, you know, 45 to 50, I'm going to feel terrible. Sometimes you feel terrible early. Sometimes you feel terrible a little bit later. There's not necessarily like a linear process with that. And then I guess it comes down to just diving into the actual variables and the things that happen on race day. There's a lot that can happen in an ultra marathon, in a 50 kilometer. You've only got to look at the marathon to know that it's a very fickle event, a very fickle distance. And the chances of coming away, you know, happy with what you've done are generally a little bit lower than things going the other way and maybe being somewhere in the middle or completely missing your goal. And that's just the nature of running. I think it'd be a crime to wake up on race morning and just expect that things are going to feel good. Because we know from training that some days you just wake up and you just feel terrible, and that, you know, running doesn't exist in this little vacuum that we like to create. And there's a lot of other stresses in our lives that tend to contribute to, I guess, how we perform in running. But, you know, if someone's disappointed with their race, it's a case of looking at, you know, what we did on the day. So how the execution was, like, were you feeling enough? How was your pacing? What were the conditions like? Did you adapt to the conditions in front of you? All of that sort of thing. Some days it's just like that. You wake up and you have a terrible run. We've all been there before. And then it all comes back down to, you know, drilling in that the process is always more valuable than the outcome. And as long as you're ticking the basics week to week, month to month, consistency, engaging with that process, you will get the outcomes. But they're not always guaranteed. I think that's the thing with running. Those outcomes aren't guaranteed. And it's probably a big part of what keeps people coming back. You know, just the thought that, hey, I might have that day today. Like today's the day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to feel great. I'm going to get everything that I've been working for. And I think that's what drives a lot of people.
Yeah, you're right. There is just so much that can happen. And you can be so prepared and planned out everything so meticulously, and then something's just thrown your way that you're not expecting. So yeah, having that ability to adapt, I think, is really helpful. And that's something that you said to me as well. And I think a good place to wrap up would be, you did send me a couple of tips a few days before, which I just read so many times and thought were really valuable. And I think number six is where I'd really love to leave this conversation and give the listeners something to think about. And I think it's really an important message for us to be reminded of, and something that you've mentioned throughout the whole episode. And you've said that these things are fun once you've normalized that there's 100% chance that things are going to be difficult. And I think that's a really good reminder, because you can forget, like you can feel so prepared and you can train so hard and you can think that, as you said, you're going to wake up feeling good and that everything's going to go well. But I think if you, as you said, if you normalize and understand that things are probably going to go wrong and things are definitely going to be really hard, like it's an ultra marathon, it's not going to feel great, it's not going to feel easy, yeah. Like it's going to be really hard moments. Once you go, oh, okay, like I understand that's going to happen. Once you get to that moment, you're like, oh, I'm prepared for this. I knew this was going to happen.
This is what I'm here for. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the whole point, right? So yep. I think that's a fantastic message. And for people who are maybe newer to the sport to really understand that, it'll probably really help for their first ultra.
That to be honest, that point gets lost, I think, because a lot of people come to these challenges after maybe seeing like a YouTube video or seeing some sort of, you know, Instagram reel where things just look super easy, and they're not seeing the 99% of stuff that happens in training on a week-to-week basis. And they think that by looking at, I guess, people at the top of the sport, they think, oh, these guys and girls make it look so easy. You know, it must be easy. But like, I think the one thing that you've got to bring it back to is these things are like inherently difficult. It doesn't matter if you're just looking to complete the distance or you want to compete. These things are very difficult. They don't get easier. Like you just run faster. That is really the core of it. I think people can kind of get lost a little bit on race day when they think, oh my God, I feel so bad. Like I feel terrible. When it's kind of like, well, you're running 50 kilometers. Like that is not a normal thing to do. You know, if you go to the coffee shop in the morning and you let someone know you're going to run 50 Ks on the weekend, they're going to think you're the weirdest person they've ever met. It's just not a normal thing. And we tend to normalize it because we operate in these weird circles of runners, right? But it is weird. It's not that cool. and so once you accept that things are difficult, and that things are going to be difficult on race day, you can really like immerse yourself in that experience and enjoy the challenges that come with it. You know, it's effectively like a day of problem solving, because there is going to be issues that pop up. And I think it's important to understand that just going in with an open mind, knowing you've done the most that you can do in training, but being open to whatever experience you get, because you can walk away from a race that on the outside might look like a really poor race with like a wealth of knowledge for how to get better in the next one. Sometimes you can walk away from a really great performance and not have too many takeaways to bring to it, you know, to bring forward. Mm. So just being open to that experience, and then, yeah, understanding that like these things are difficult, but they're fun. And as long as you can understand that and you're going in with that open mindset and kind of that, I guess, that growth mindset, being able to absorb the things around you and the experiences you have, then you can't really go wrong.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's a fantastic place to leave it. And yeah, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your time over the last few months and in the last hour. Both of those things have been really, really enjoyable, and I've really appreciated learning from you and, yeah, getting to understand how you do things and applying that to my own training has been really, really cool. So I would highly suggest anyone who is keen to take on the next challenge, check out the Distance Collective. Tim and Michaela are both incredible coaches. We'll have all the links below for those who are interested or just want to send an email, maybe ask some questions. Is that the best place for them to reach you, just by email if they're curious?
Yeah, for sure. So there'll be a little contact form on the website if they want to. Yep. which will go straight through to our emails. So yeah, or on Instagram as well. Feel free to find us on Instagram.
Okay, perfect. Sounds good. We'll have those all linked below. And yeah, again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.